The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
You are listening to The Hard Shoulder here in News Talk. Kieran Cudahy with you until 7 o'clock this evening. Plenty to come between now and then. Conor Pope is going to be along in about 30 minutes' time. You don't want to miss this because he will tell you how you could save up to 1,500 quid by making a couple of simple phone calls. That's right. And in our political panel a little bit later in the show, we're going to review how Micheál Martin's government has got on. 12 months in office. A senior member of his government, Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, is with me now. Minister, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
I might ask you to pop on those earphones there in front of you because I just want to play a little clip of a listener to the show, Jim. He got in touch with us earlier to talk about what he and his partner went through recently in a maternity hospital.
Didn't think the worst immediately, but we attended the hospital that evening about 10:30. She had to go in through A&E. I was stopped. She had to go in on her own, so I had to return to the car and sat communicating by text message. She was panicking desperately, of course, at this stage, and full of worry and anxiety, and it's just very difficult. I had to sit outside in the car, and as I said, just you're helpless. There's nothing you can do. And about an hour later, she came out. She had stopped communicating by text, but given the hospital's set up and all, sometimes you wouldn't have coverage, so I didn't think that was too unusual. But then she came out and she just sat into the car, distraught, just broke down and said that there was no heartbeat.
Yeah, that was Jim who got in touch with us speaking earlier on the show. Minister, that's not good enough, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, my heart really does break for Carol and for Jim. There's a lot of couples have to deal with this tragedy, more than I think is often understood, certainly by men. There's an awful lot of miscarriages and they are absolutely devastating for people. So for Carol to have to go through that without Jim and for Jim to have to sit outside is nothing short of heartbreaking. A lot of progress has been made, and I can give you the latest update now, Kieran, in terms of the 19 maternity units, but maybe we just start with that.
Yeah.
Because while a lot of you and I have talked about the four criteria before, and we can come back to those, but one of those criteria has not been in the case of emergency, and the emergency cases, along with an awful lot of really important visits in healthcare, were scaled back because of COVID. So I've been in very close contact with the HSC on this. They're very aware. We're acting on it. The emergency situation is being looked at this week, and a full plan is being drawn up. All six of the maternity networks around the country are involved. And in the coming weeks, not only will, as of today, we should have the other four criteria fully met, and we can talk to that, but just to this heartbreaking situation that Carol found herself in and Jim found himself in, the plan will be put in place to restore that. The plan will be in place this week. And then in the coming weeks, that's now going to be rolled out across the country.
Okay, so a couple of things there. First of all, in terms of scans and labour and everything else, these situations whereby, you know, most hospitals signed up, others hadn't, you say by the end of this week, there will be uniformity.
I'm saying by today, right?
By today.
So the HSC and I were looking at this very closely last week. There was another review done. The last time actually we were here, I was giving you the latest audit.
Why did it take so long? Because I know it's 2 months since this was meant to all end. It's a month ago since you expressed your absolute frustration, I think, was to quote you, that this was still happening. I mean, that these kind of feudal lords and their fiefdoms not implementing policy.
Most of it was dealt with, right? And by the end of last week, there are 19 maternity units around the country. 16 of them were reporting as fully compliant. 3 of them said they weren't, and they gave an undertaking that by today, now the HSC will be checking, but that by today, the 4 criteria we discussed before would be in place. And just for your listeners, that's a minimum 30-minute visit a day during full labour. That includes from being induced right the way through, if being induced is part of it.
No waiting to the last minute.
None of that. The anomaly scan, and then NICU, where that is required,
yeah.
the neonatal intensive care, right? Now, on top of that, this week we're looking at emergency, and I want to go further, and indeed the HSE wants to go further. So the next level is the antenatal appointments as well,
yeah.
Right? So what Jim won't have been able to do is go in with Carol for the antenatal appointments, and they're important as well. And these were withdrawn reluctantly by our clinicians, but it was to keep mums and babies safe. And we must always remember that these are good, good people working in maternity care in Ireland. They were doing this to keep mums and babies safe. And we've been working very hard now that the healthcare settings have become much safer thanks to the vaccine programme to get all of these visitations back to where they used to be.
How long, though, are we going to keep hearing these stories? Because, like I said, it's 2 months since we were told that restrictions should be lifted. And it's only today that you say there's going to be uniformity across the board. I mean, will I be speaking to you? It's now June, at some point in August, and you say, yeah, finally now, you know, in emergency situations, people are allowed in. As you said, an awful lot of women miscarry every day in this country. How many more Jims and Johns and everybody else are we going to have contacting the show for the next 8 weeks?
When we talked, I think there were, 14 of the 19 were reporting as fully compliant. There were five that we mentioned. That came down to three. And as of today, it should be none. And then the emergency.
But it took 8 weeks to get there. And I mean, if you're only looking at an emergency from today, is it going to be another 8 weeks? Are we going to have all of this again in a month's time? You expressing your frustration. I wish the hospitals would do what we're telling them. But again, Jim is left out in the car park. Is this going to go on for another 8 weeks?
The plan is that in the coming weeks, so we're only talking 3 or 4 weeks. The plan is in the coming weeks, the emergency visits, just like that heartbreaking situation, would be facilitated. I just want to reemphasize, Kieran, you know, our obstetric teams and our midwives and our clinicians in this, they're not the bad guys.
No, right? and these things are just full of praise for the care that they're getting in a hospital. The criticism is of hospital management, if I'm being honest with you.
Well, the hospital managers are trying to look after mums and babies. They're not some group of people who sort of sit in ivory towers. Like, they're down, they're on the wards. There's clinical leads in the hospitals. It's really, first of all, it is very frustrating for mums, dads, for partners. It's heartbreaking in the situation that Carol and Jim found themselves in. The maternity services themselves want to be able to provide this. They always have before.
It suits some of these hospital managers that an advocate for the pregnant woman, and I'm not denying agency, the women here, I'll be accused of it, but I'm not, but that an advocate for them is not there with them.
I really don't think that's what's going on here, Kieran. I really don't. I think what's going on is local clinical decisions to keep mums and babies safe have been made. So, for example, one of the hospitals where there was a lot of really good work done was in Letterkenny. The reason there was so much good work done in Letterkenny was because they had a much, much higher incidence of COVID around them. And so mums and babies were at more risk. And so local decisions were being made for that reason. But as I've said to you, the HSE is on it. Paul Reid and I have been talking directly on this. We had this report back of 16 of them fully compliant. We got the guarantees for today they'd all be compliant, and we have to push on for here, because this is affecting mums, dads, future mums, future dads all over the country every day.
Okay, so 3 or 4 weeks is better than 8 weeks. Why not say by the end of this week? That's just for, like, if any woman. As the awful experience of miscarriage between now and Friday, that their partner's not going to learn about it by WhatsApp out in a car park.
I agree. We've got to listen to our clinicians, though, right? I'm not an obstetrician. I'm not an infectious disease specialist. I'm not responsible for keeping mums and babies directly safe in any individual hospital, right? We set policy, and we have set very clear policy, and they are very clear as to what it is. But the flip side of this is we have to trust our clinicians, we have to trust our midwives, trust our obstetricians, trust our infectious disease people, specialists within the hospitals as well. They are looking. It doesn't always feel like that, particularly when you can't get in or if you're in there and your partner can't come in to support you. But ultimately, they are looking to keep mums and babies safe.
Listen, on the issue, and there's still messages coming in, and it's a story we're going to stay on top of over the next few weeks, as you said. Listen, as you hope that this situation would be resolved. On the issue of maternity hospitals and the National Maternity Hospital, let me ask you about that. The government, now the latest is the government are going to approach the Sisters of Charity and the St. Vincent's Hospital Group with a view to purchasing the land off them. Is that it?
Well, my strong preference is that we would own the land, right? Now, there's a few different pieces to this. Ultimately, what we need as quickly as possible is a modern maternity hospital for women, for mums and babies. People are happy with the site. Co-locating with Vincent's is a good idea. Yeah. It's a very good hospital. It means very good continuity of care. And as you know, women's healthcare is a big, big platform, a big, big priority for me and for this government. And that's an important piece of it, right? People are happy that the National Maternity Hospital will be the group operating it.
Yeah.
And so really two questions are being asked. One is, will the NMH be fully clinically, operationally and financially independent?
Mm-hmm.
All of the legal advice I've seen so far says absolutely. It's to do with these reserved powers.
Yeah.
And I can reiterate again that I will not be bringing any recommendation to government on a governance structure unless I'm convinced that the governance, the independence is bulletproof.
Mm.
So that's the first issue.
Yeah.
And whether or not we own the land is independent of that issue. That's a governance and corporate legal issue, right? The second issue is, should we own the land? Should we buy the land? Should we be gifted? I'd very much like us to be gifted the land. Mm. Simon Harris tried in 2017, 2018. St. Vincent's came back and said, no, not interested.
St. Vincent's now, though, say that didn't happen. They said they haven't been approached. Like, this was the narrative that was out there, was that, you know, they had no interest in either giving the land away or selling the land. They were perfectly happy to keep ownership of the land. And they've come out in the last few days and said, well, we haven't actually been approached officially by government. And we're open to an approach.
Great. So I will be approaching them. I'll be sitting down with all of the stakeholders.
They both can't be telling the truth, though.
Yeah. Look, we have a meeting where it was tabled with St. Vincent's. It was raised by Simon Harris. It was raised by the Secretary General.
So it was raised. They're wrong when they say there was never an approach.
Well, I haven't seen the letter, but I'm informed by the department that there is a letter in response from St. Vincent saying, we're not selling the land. Now, okay. I haven't seen it. Okay.
Okay.
And to be honest, Kieran, that's all history. It's before my time. What I want to do is I want to meet the stakeholders and go in with a very open mind. And it is my strong preference that we would be gifted the land or buy the land if needs be, right? Why? It's cleaner. Does it affect clinical independence? Actually, I don't believe it does, right? That's all about corporate governance. But it just makes more sense to people that if we're spending a lot of money on this building and we end up with this amazing co-located campus of an adult teaching hospital and a national maternity hospital, that the state would own the land. But in terms of the bit that really matters to people,
yeah,
which is, are the full range of services going to be provided and will they be the highest possible maternity and gynae services for women? The answer is yes, absolutely they will.
At market value, could we afford the land?
I don't want to get into any of those kind of conversations on air.
Not sure we could.
There's private conversations to be had, you know.
All right. Can I ask what I have you about the Delta variant? How worried are you about it?
I'm very worried about it. I think it's a serious thing. So we know it's now the dominant variant in Britain. It's in excess of 90%. I was in Luxembourg last week and had my first face-to-face with the European health ministers, and I was talking to them. They're worried. In Portugal now, it's in excess of 40% of new cases. It's spiking in different places. We have a spike in Derry City. And I have no doubt, we know it's here. We know it is a certain number of new cases. And the public health experts say it's only a matter of time before it becomes the dominant variant here. We have a lot of people who are not fully vaccinated. We have younger people who are not vaccinated yet at all. And the emerging evidence from the UK is that this could be significantly more severe. So the number being used at the moment is, it leads to 2.6 times on average more hospitalizations, including younger people. So we have to take this, and we are taking this absolutely seriously. It's a very, very serious variant. It seems to be much more contagious than the Alpha variant, which was the UK variant, which was much more contagious than the original strain. And it appears to be more severe as well. We're taking it very seriously, and we are reiterating the message, particularly if you're not fully vaccinated. If you're fully vaccinated, you have quite a lot of protection, to make sure that we all keep following the public health guidelines. Because the good news, while we are talking about this very serious variant, the good news is that the disease rates in Ireland are continuing to fall, steadily fall. We flatlined for a few weeks, but we're falling again. Limerick is high, but steady, and will be falling. Donegal was high and began to fall. There were various other areas that came up. Dublin is falling, which is really important because it's so much of the population. So the epidemiological situation here is good, but with this huge caveat, which is the Delta variant.
And listen, we've seen in the UK that they've had to extend their, I don't say lockdown, they're not in a lockdown situation, but they've had to extend restrictions for 4 weeks from June 21st was today, was meant to be the lifting of all restrictions there until July the 19th. That's a possibility here as well, isn't it?
Well, these things are always a possibility, right? And I'm not making any predictions, to be absolutely clear. But every time government says, okay, so here's the next 4 weeks, it's always caveated by, it depends how we're doing epidemiologically.
Yeah.
And as I said,
but let me put it this way, sorry. I mean, while that caveat's always included, I get the sense that a couple of months ago, there was a real optimism that that's all it was, a caveat, and it might never apply. No. Whereas the Delta variant, like there is real concern amongst you and your colleagues and amongst public health officials and the CMO and everybody else that actually, look, this is a real possibility. We're not saying it's a probability yet. It's not at that point, but it's a real possibility now that we're going to have to review things.
There's a real concern about the Delta variant. However, there were real concerns at every 4 week period. So you'll remember that when we got the initial projections from NPHET as to what was likely to happen as we went through March, April, May, June and opened up, we have done better consistently. So that risk has always been there. It's just because the country has been doing so well and people have been really pulling together to make that happen that we've been able to proceed. And in the previous two, we've actually been able to go slightly ahead because things have been going so well. And look, if the Delta variant wasn't on the horizon, the only thing we'd all be saying is it's going great, it's falling, steady progress. You know, there's the usual caveat. So if you look at the age groups, going very well, the vaccinated age groups, it's really collapsed the number of cases. The one age group where it is going up and it's much higher than any other age group is the 19 to 24 year old age group. So the case numbers for that age group are now about 2.5 times higher than 25 to 35.
Mm.
You know, so that's an age group who has been through hell over the last year. And just, we all have to be very careful, but we're just very conscious that that group is potentially more at risk at the moment because of that spike.
Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. Minister, thanks so many for joining us here on The Hard Shoulder.